I hope you've all had an excellent 7 days of unleavened bread. I thought we had quite an excellent start. It's all up there. To unleavened bread, we had right before the 7 days started, we had the big dough story and the how the salt helps control leavening, helps control the yeast. We learned all about salt. And then we had the message about tasting lots of flavours. Now, this is one I don't think that we had last Sabbath, on the last first day of unleavened bread. This is, I'm probably going to say this all wrong. I'm really bad at pronunciation, but Yehuda, gluten-free matzah-style squares, and these are cinnamon. Now, these are cinnamon-flavoured. And, actually, there's not too many left. It must be towards the end of unleavened bread because there's only like half a cracker in here. And these are actually imported all the way from Israel. So, there's my little contribution for you. So today I would like to talk about, the title is 7 Days Unleavened Bread. And there are so many lessons that we learn during these days. And I hope you've been able to reflect upon these 7 days and maybe you've added some stories or you reflected upon past stories about unleavened bread. And many of these lessons, and some of the lessons we learn actually before the days start. Now for me, this is one I have. Is the dreaded toaster. Now, this always seems to be my task to clean the toaster. And it's probably correct because I'm probably the one that, well, I'm not probably, I am the one that eats more toast in our house than anybody else. So it's only fair that I do that. One of the lessons I learn every year when I'm doing that, as I'm cleaning it, I'm thinking, this is an impossible task. Now, I've tried all sorts of things, by the way. I've heard some people that get the hose out and they spray the whole thing down. They put it to the side and let it dry out for 7 days. And then they plug it in and it works. So I've never been that brave. But I have, probably the best I've done is my father-in-law owns a body and fender shop. And he has the industrial air compressor. And when I say industrial, he has souped it up, you know, more than if you bought it off the shelf. He souped it up more, and the level of air that comes out of that is incredible. And that's probably the best I've done when I've used that. But that wasn't available this year. And this year I also had added to that this little thing here, the benchtop oven that I had to clean. So there was another item there. So there's all these really good lessons that we learn. And why do we do these things? I want to review this with you. 7 days. I said 7 days unleavened bread. We're to put out and to eat unleavened. Let's look at some of these verses. If you turn with me to Exodus 13, just remind us. And I've got several verses up there because this is repeated and it's said slightly differently, but the same thing is said. So Exodus 13 verse 6 says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh there shall be a feast to the Lord. So that's why we're here today. We're having a feast to the Lord. And then verse 7, unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. So unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. So hopefully you listen to the message on the first day of unleavened bread and you try to take all those different flavors of unleavened bread through the week and think about the meaning of it. And no leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. So to eat unleavened bread for 7 days and to have no leaven found. I'm getting ahead of myself. Exodus 23, go over a few chapters. In verse 15, you shall keep the feast. So Exodus 23, verse 15, you shall keep the feast of unleavened bread. That's quite emphatic, isn't it? You shall keep the feast of unleavened bread. You shall eat unleavened bread 7 days. So we are to eat unleavened bread 7 days, as I commanded you at the appointed. So in the at the time appointed in the month of Abib. So that's just the name for the first month. In the appointed time, for in it you came out of Egypt. So now we bring in this aspect of why we're doing this, because we came out of Egypt. And it says, none shall appear before me empty. So there's another aspect. When we come to these days, these holy days, it says we're not to appear empty. So we're also to come ready to give. Another aspect. Let's go across to chapter 34. Chapter 34, verse 18. The feast of unleavened bread you shall keep. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, as I commanded you in the appointed time of the month of Abib. For in the month of Abib you came out from Egypt. So again, it says because you came out of Egypt. So we have that aspect mentioned again. And then Leviticus 23 is another one of those verses. Probably chapter 23, if you haven't got that locked in your brain already. This is our go-to chapter when we talk about God's holy days, because it's set out so nicely here in chapter 23 of Leviticus. In verse 6, it says, and on the 15th day of the same month, and we know what that month is already, isn't it? It's the first month, or Abib, if you want to use that word. On the 15th day of the same month is the feast of unleavened bread to the Lord. So who's it to? The feast of unleavened bread to the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. So that's, again, that's quite emphatic, isn't it? 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. And that was emphasized so well, wasn't it, by somebody who just kept eating in front of us a week ago. But you must eat. Deuteronomy 16. So Deuteronomy 16 is another place we often go to, don't we, on these high days, when we're talking about offerings. But in verse 3 it says, you shall eat no leavened bread with it. Right? So you shall eat no leavened bread. So there's two aspects. Do not eat leavened bread. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread with it. That is the bread of affliction. And why the bread of affliction? For you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, that you may remember the day in which you came out of the land of Egypt, all the days of your life. So this was to be a reminder for Israel. And it's also a reminder for us to remember all the days of our life. And we have these 7 days. And God gives us these 7 days, because I'll speak for myself. If I only do it for one day, okay, I did it for one day, it wouldn't have the impact, would it? It's almost like God designed us and knows how to help us to learn. And so we do it for 7 days. And as we've seen in these verses, this mention of Egypt, because you came out of Egypt. And Egypt is often connected with sin. It's often connected with sin. If you go to Acts 7 with me, please. Acts 7. And this is where Stephen... The deacon Stephen is, we often call this Stephen's sermon. It's almost, you can almost say this is Stephen's declaration. This is Stephen crying out with a hope that lies within him. There's a verse that says, you know, to be ready to give an answer for the hope that lies within you. Well, this is what Stephen was doing. And this is a beautiful summary, this chapter. What was Stephen doing here? He talks about Abraham. It goes back to Abraham, and he talks about Abraham and the promises to Abraham, and then having to go to Egypt, and then there was a new Pharaoh, a new king came along that didn't know Joseph. And so he rehearses all this. He talks about God delivering Israel by Moses, and in the opening prayer was mentioned some of the incredible stories, these things that we have in place. And Stephen was rehearsing all this. And he talks about God's deliverance of his people. And then I'm going to pick it up now in verse 38, when Stephen is talking about after they've come out of Egypt. And in verse 38, he says, "This is he who was in the congregation in the wilderness, with the angel who spoke to him on Mount Sinai, and with our fathers, the one who received the living oracles to give to us, whom our fathers would not obey but rejected. And in their hearts," this is the real part here, "in their hearts they turn back to Egypt." Right, so it's a symbolism. Because in their hearts they didn't physically go back to Egypt. But what it was is they were going back to things that they were supposed to have left behind. So in their hearts they turned back to Egypt, saying to Aaron, "Make us gods to go before us." So what was the real essence? Egypt itself is not a horrible place, right? The land of Egypt is not a horrible place. But it's what they brought from Egypt. The false gods. "Make us gods to go before us. As for this Moses who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." So Moses was out of sight. And now we don't know what's become of him, so we need help. There are sins we are to avoid. One of the lessons we have during this week is there are sins we are to avoid, not to go back to Egypt. There's leaven to be aware of. And leaven is used to symbolize what we are to be aware of during this week. Leaven is used to represent sin that we are to avoid. Let's pick up a couple of those verses. Matthew 16 and starting verse 6 through 12. Matthew 16. "Then Jesus said to them, 'Take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees.'" Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. And then what happens? Well, they reasoned among themselves, the disciples. They reasoned among themselves, saying, "Is it because we have taken no bread?" Where were their minds at? It was only on the physical. They weren't connecting with the spiritual lesson. And so all the way through this, God has given us, you know, something like this, or maybe somebody made homemade your own unleavened bread this week. But it's for us to think about the spiritual lesson. So continuing in Matthew here, they reason among themselves, "Oh, because we've got no bread," they were worried. What were they worried about? They were worried about the physical. "But when Jesus perceived it, he said to them, 'Oh, you of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves because you have brought no bread? Do you not yet understand or remember the five loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up? Nor the seven loaves of the 4,000 and how many large baskets you took up? How is it you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning the bread," right? Not the physical bread, but you should be aware, right? Again, this is what to be aware of. Beware the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. And there's some translations, I think New English Translation says, "Beware the yeast." Beware the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Verse 12. "Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but the doctrine of the Pharisees and Sadducees." So what were they to beware of? In this verse, there's other places that talk about hypocrisy, but this verse says false teaching. The Pharisees and Sadducees, what some of the things they were teaching we need to beware of. You think about that today. If you're someone that tends to get caught up, and where do we get that? Where do we find our Pharisees and Sadducees today? Well, online. Don't worry, that's where we're going to find those. if you're someone that tends to get caught up in that, maybe you think, well, how do I put that out of my life? How do I put that out? Well, maybe I'd stop going to that website. Oh, but it's so good, and oh, it tastes good. Oh, well, that sounds like one of the lessons, doesn't it? Maybe that's one of the things we think about. Let's go to Mark 8. And it can come in all sorts of forms. Mark 8, verse 15. It says, then he charged them, saying, take heed, beware of the leaven, right? Beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and this verse it says, and the leaven of Herod. And Herod was a leader. What false things is he saying? And again, we can get caught up with our leaders today, can't we, as well? And we try to encourage people in the church not to get caught up in politics. Ah, but it's so intriguing. Tasty. Fluffy and good. And don't worry, tomorrow I'll try and get something probably fluffy and puffed up tomorrow. But when I'm doing that, I'm still going to be thinking about the lessons of 7 days unleavened bread. And remember, it only takes a little. It only takes a little. Right, 1 Corinthians 5, verse 6, and we read 1 Corinthians 5 last week, the beginning of unleavened bread. Right, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. And so there's many things that we can get caught up to leaven the whole lump. We are to put out the old leaven. Again, it's in 1 Corinthians 5, the chapter we often go to. We're to put out the old leaven, and we're to put in the unleavened. We're to put in the unleavened. Another verse that was mentioned last week, Isaiah 53. And in that chapter it says about Christ, there was no deceit found in his mouth. Right, so Christ was without deceit. So what did Christ have in him? Well, if I can tie it back into 1 Corinthians 5, he had sincerity, didn't he? He was full of sincerity. So he had deceit out, sincerity in. Well, in Christ's case, he didn't have to work on getting the deceit out because there was no room for deceit. He was full of sincerity and truth. So we get deceit out and we put sincerity in. We put lies out and we put truth in. So this lessons we have. We put out the old leaven, we put in the unleavened. Let's go to another verse that of Paul's. Because Paul, I believe, he takes it up another notch. Let's go to Ephesians 4 with me. Ephesians chapter 4. Where Paul takes it up another notch in the learning. Ephesians 4. Ephesians 4 and verse 28 is what I'll focus on. But leading up to this, right before we get to verse 28, Paul talks about to put off the old man, the old ways. Put off your former conduct, Paul says, and to put on the new man. So Paul's really saying the same thing again here, isn't he? But in different words. Put out the old leaven and put in the new unleavened. Here he says, put off the old man and put on the new man, that you may be renewed. And then we'll pick it up in verse 25. It says, therefore, put away lying. So what did I just say before? Put lies out, put truth in. Here Paul says it. Put away lying in verse 25. And how do we do that? Each one speak truth with his neighbor. So you put lying out and you replace it with truth. And with your neighbour, who's that? Oh, the person next door to you? Well, no, it's a lot closer to home, because what does Paul say? For we are members of one another. We are members of one another. So who's our neighbour? Right, it's the person, the people beside us here in this room. And then he has another example, verse 26. Be angry and do not sin. So now he says, look, there's times you, the fact that he says be angry, do not sin, Paul's saying here, there are times when you are going to be angry. But do not sin. Now who do we get angry with? Well, our neighbours, right, that we talk about maybe sometimes. Sometimes those who are closest to us, and that makes sense because they're the ones that we spend the most time with, isn't it? My wife never gets angry at me. Right? No, there are times when we get angry with each other. We get angry with who else? We get angry with ourselves. We can't get much closer than that, can you? Have you ever been angry with yourself? I have. I'll speak for everybody here. Sometimes you get angry with yourself. Who else can get angry with? What if you got angry with God? That can happen. You can get angry with God. But then Paul says, okay, but here's the solution, right? There's times you're going to get angry, and maybe even angry with God and those closest to us. He says, do not, right? Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. So now we have, okay, all right, there's times you're going to get angry, but don't let the sun go down in wrath. Nor give place to the devil. So what is this saying here? Anger can be one of those, like a door opening, and say, okay, Satan, come on in. But if we follow this, don't let the sun go down is the principle. That's something to work on. I know people that have worked on that in their Christian walk. And they've really focused on not letting the sun go down on their wrath. So don't get angry after dinner. You know, get angry, you know, after breakfast, so you've got the whole day to, you know, to be angry. No, that's not the principle here, isn't it? It's don't let it fester. Don't let it be that little leaven that leavens the whole lump. Don't let that happen. And then verse 28, the key scripture I wanted to focus here, it says, "Let her," so he used the example of stealing. Let him who stole, verse 28, steal no more. So what's the solution? What are we saying here? Let him who stole steal no more. So we use an example of stealing, which hopefully is not a problem for most of you in this room. But it's something we can relate to, isn't it? Okay, if you've got a problem with stealing, okay, what do? Well, stop stealing. Whatever the sin is that's in your life, okay, you've got to stop doing it. And sometimes it's like cleaning that toaster. And you're like, this is impossible. And God says, that's right. Because you're trying to do it with your own garden hose or your own air compressor. But God says, don't worry. I've got the really big air compressor. Right? I can blow all that leaven out. Are you ready? Hold on. And sometimes it feels like in your life, you know, figuratively, oh, this is like a hurricane happening here. Right? So, stop the sin. Let's keep reading. It says, but rather let him labor. So what do we do now? Okay. So, steal no more. Point, step one. Step two, let him labor. So, we replace the sin. So, like I said before, stop lying. Replace it with sincerity and truth. Stop stealing. Labor. You have to replace the sin, whatever the sin is. But you notice Paul then takes it up another notch now. Let's keep reading in verse 28. Let him who stole steal no more, no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good. So we're to work at something that is good. We're to work at something that is good and is profitable, that we're ready to give. So then point three, that he may have something to give to him who has need. So now, what's it? Step one, steal no more. Get the sin out. Let him labor. Right? Replace the sin. But then your works that you can give to others. What's that talking about? That's talking about being an example of living God's way. And part of God's way, as Mr. Armstrong used to, you know, drum into us for so many years, is the give way. So we're to labor to the point that we can give to others, that we can help others out. And on each holy day, what do we get a chance to do? We get a chance to give. As Mr. Corbett pointed out last week, giving an offering is part of our worship to God. It's part of our praise to God. It's part of our thankfulness. And during this Days of Unleavened Bread, it's part of us, our thankfulness for the lesson of 7 days of unleavened bread. And to celebrate. When we give an offering, it's a time to celebrate what we have here. And it's so incredible. I couldn't have planned this. Right, if I try to, okay, so it's 7 days, eat no leaven. What? I love leaven, right? I love my toast in the morning. One of the things we used to try and do, one of our unleavened bread feast traditions, we didn't do it this year, but when Keith and Bree were little, before unleavened bread started, so the last morning beforehand, if we could, we'd go out and buy donuts, right? So we had donuts. That was kind of our unleavened bread tradition as well. And then we had all sorts of fancy unleavened goodies during the week, like, you know, Mr. Corbett pointed out last week. And we celebrate it. We give an offering. Part of giving an offering is actually practicing God's way. Because in order to give an offering, we had to work, we had to save, we had to think about it, put aside money to say, yes, I want to give this to God. As an act of worship, as an act of praise, as an act of celebration, as a means of practicing God's way of giving. And it emphasizes leaven out and unleavened in. Leaven out and unleavened in. So let's just read it one more time from the Old Testament here, from the Hebrew Scripture. Exodus 13. The lesson of 7 days unleavened bread. Exodus 13, verse 6. We read these couple of verses, but we're going to just read a couple more and end this here. Exodus 13, verse 6. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. So today we've got a feast to the Lord, and I've only got a little bit of my cinnamon matzos left. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. It shall be eaten 7 days. And no leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. Verse 8. And you shall tell your son in that day, saying, this is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt. It shall be a sign to you on your hand, and as a memorial between your eyes. Right, so I'm putting it right between my eyes. It's a memorial between your eyes that the Lord's law, so what's the whole purpose here? So the Lord's law may be in your mouth. And your Mr. Corbett literally did that last week, didn't he? A week ago. If the Lord's law may be in your mouth, and don't we think about that as we're eating? For with a strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. You shall therefore keep this ordinance in its season from year to year.